Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
The NFL season has arrived. Welcome in to another Behind the Bets podcast. I am Doug Kazarian. We are taping this September 5th, Thursday. Bears-Packers tonight. Jackson, are you ready?
I don't know if I'm emotionally ready, but I'm physically ready to watch the football.
It's always that weird feeling because summer's not officially over. You know, obviously September 21st, but still warm out.
It's starting to get a little bit darker sooner, but not all the way. So, I mean, luckily 8 o'clock kickoff, it'll be dark. I'll be ready to watch some football.
It is. That is very true. So we have a lot to get through here on the podcast. Mr. Now Executive Director is going to be joining us. We have Baby Bankroll Bonanza. I'm coming out of the gates firing. And Mike Clay has some props. He has five props for all the primetime games. One tonight, Trubisky under. I'll just give you a little heads up if you're running behind, but you want to hear his breakdown and then also the other props. Trubisky under, passing yards, that is. And we're going to get into breakdown all the games. There's been a lot of line movement this summer, particularly with Andrew Luck retiring and some other moving parts, if you will. And like I said, we'll do the Baby Bankroll Bonanza and then wrap things up with Mike Clay. So should be a good season, should be a good podcast coming up, and let's get to it. And thanks to everyone for their loyal listeners. Remember, Wednesdays, we do the college football card, so that podcast as well. So, all right, let's fire it up.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Oh, it's back. The big open. John Murray, how are you, my man?
Good. I'm ready for football. Can't believe it's finally here. Real NFL football, I should say. We've had a couple weeks of college, but the NFL is the big deal around here, and we start tonight.
Is it, though? I was having that discussion. What's the breakdown of handle
in terms of football? Bit more on the NFL. Now, on a weekend like this, we'll actually handle more on college football. Well, I don't know, because it's week one. Usually it's more on college football because there's more games. But if you do a by game breakdown, NFL is still by far the king.
That's what I said.
And the first week of NFL is the third busiest week of the year. March Madness is number one, and Super Bowl weekend is number two, and this weekend that we're starting tonight is number three.
Gotcha. Interesting. So it is, but during the season, I was always told it was about 50-50, but obviously the volume of college is the difference maker. That's what makes it.
Yeah, I think now this week there's 16 NFL games. There's four primetime games. I think NFL will outdo college this week, but the subsequent weeks, I would imagine college will outdo NFL by a little bit. But then again, if you break it down game by game, it's NFL by a long shot.
Makes sense. So let's talk about just the interesting line moves. Obviously, with week one, and we talked about it last week with college football's week one and even week zero, is that there's so many months that the lines can move. And whereas we don't see that the rest of the season for obvious reasons. And we've seen, obviously, so the Monday Nighter has moved a decent amount with Denver and Oakland, but there's been a little bit of movement elsewhere. What sort of stands out to you as you've been behind the counter?
Well, it's kind of unfair, but obviously the game that's moved the most is Indianapolis and the LA Chargers. Now, that's mostly because of Andrew Luck retiring, right, of course, but that number swung quite a bit. We opened it Chargers -3.5. We took money on the Colts. This is back in April. We went to 3. Now, we went up to 4, thinking Andrew Luck might miss the game with an injury. Of course, he retires. We reopened it at 7. We saw guys take 7 with Indianapolis. Right now, we're at 6.5. So, I mean, that's the game that's fluctuated the most. One game that we saw some movement on last night, we had people taking 4 with Jacksonville last night. And right now we have Jacksonville +3 even money. We're going to need that side huge when that game kicks off on Sunday. Everybody's on Kansas City, but some of the sharp guys, they couldn't wait, and they took Jacksonville last night.
And the numbers come down, and so they did the right thing getting ahead of it. What do you think?
Yeah, they probably did, but I wouldn't be surprised. If they had waited and they were a little bit more patient, I think they could have gotten a better number on Sunday. But then one of their competitors could have beat them to the number. So, I mean, they know what they're doing. I'm not going
right.
to question them.
So we saw New England and Pittsburgh get up to 6. That's down to 5.5 for the most part.
Yeah, we're at 5.5 on that game. I think I saw 5 out there somewhere in town.
Yeah, MGM.
That's a number that might also drift back up between now and kickoff, especially if a lot of the favorites cover during the day on Sunday. Then all these books are going to have huge liability to the Patriots on Sunday Night Football.
So that's what I was going to ask you next, is what do you think will move the most between now and kickoff?
Well, let me give you one that's already moved a lot because I think it's worth talking about, and that's Baltimore.
Yeah.
You know,
this that was number, the one I was going to ask you about.
Yeah, this number went from 3.5. We got as high as 7 here at the Superbook. There was some buyback at 7. Look, a lot's changed since April. Back in April, we didn't think Miami was going to be any good, but now they've basically shown the NFL that they're punting this season. They're trading away a lot of their veteran players. They're accumulating draft picks, kind of taking a model that we saw the Cleveland Browns do a few years ago that's, in my opinion, worked for the Browns because the Browns are loaded now. So that's a number that certainly we've seen a lot of movement on. And I think that at plus 7, I can understand why the wise guys got involved with the Dolphins, but this is just a team that doesn't seem interested in being competitive this year.
It's the squarest play on the board. I just had to submit my picks for the ESPN.com chalk website, and I don't care. Like, I just think it's the right play.
You think it's the squarest play on the board, and you're playing it anyway? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah. I mean, the squares win occasionally.
Oh, of course they do.
But yeah.
Well, of
so,
course
like,
they do.
I just think, here's the thing, just what you said about sports has changed, and this is why I was, my biggest bet of the season was the Orioles season win total. There are teams actively tanking. Now, are they throwing the ball out of bounds on purpose? Is Ryan Fitzpatrick going to hand the ball off to the Ravens defensive ends? No. They're going to try, but it's the roster construction, and it comes from up above. And I really don't think Miami is trying to win this year. I think they've have no offensive line. They have no kind of like real weapons. Ryan Fitzpatrick is competent, obviously, and has his moments. But this is a game where the Ravens should just go in and win by double digits.
And they've got a rookie head coach as well, Brian Flores, coming over from New England. And I think he's been set up for failure, but I think it's what the organization wants to have happen. So I don't think he'll be held accountable when they do fail. So they're an interesting team to watch. I think next year is going to be more interesting. I think teams will even more actively tank in 2020 for a chance to draft Trevor Lawrence in 2021. But sort of getting ahead of myself there. I don't think – I like Tua and I like Herbert, but there's nobody in this year's draft class that I think will have the professional-level impact that Trevor Lawrence will have.
We've talked about it before, that Jets season where it's like, oh, my God, will they go winless? And 2.5 wins is the season win total, whatever it was, and they win like 6. So I think I've tried to play devil's advocate. It was like, just how bad is Miami? Like, are we sure they're terrible? And I don't
I'm
think,
pretty sure.
I don't think they're inept, but I think – this is a game where, like, you don't want to be on Miami.
A lot of sharp guys have bet Baltimore over wins. I can tell you that. Over wins. And we like the Ravens over wins. That AFC North is going to be very competitive this year with Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland all dueling.
Yeah. No, it's going to be very interesting. And Cincinnati is another team I've played a little devil's advocate. Are we sure they're terrible?
Well, I think Cincinnati is going to be better this year than they were just because they finally moved on from Marvin Lewis. They bring Zach Taylor in from the Rams. He was the quarterback's coach with the L.A. Rams under Sean McVay. When you get rid of a terrible coach, you can't help but get better. We've seen that over and over and over again in the NFL. We saw it last year with the Indianapolis Colts. The problem I think the Bengals have is that division. Those three teams I just mentioned right ahead of them in the division may prevent them from having their improvements show up in their win-loss record. It's what I think of the Oakland Raiders, too. I think the Raiders are going to be improved, but I think their schedule will prevent it from showing up in their win-loss record. I do agree with your point, though. I think Cincinnati will be a lot, can we say, feistier this year than they were last year?
Yeah, the phrase I used that they gave me a hard time was sneaky mediocre. I don't think they'll be that good. But they started last year 4-2 or something like that. Then they had really bad injuries. So who's going to be the inept teams? Or are we just going to kind of pour one out for the Hugh Jackson Cleveland Browns 1-win-in-2-season stretch?
Yeah, I'm going to miss Hugh Jackson. That was like half of my material in the media appearances I did was making fun of Hugh Jackson. So I'm going to have to watch really closely this week to see who the dumbest coach is now. I think Miami is probably a good starting point. I don't know what to make of Arizona. Like, I really just don't know what to make of Kingsbury and Kyler Murray in Arizona. We're trying to stay a little high on the Lions because we know the money is going to come in on the Lions on Sunday. We got Detroit -3 even money right now. I look out there, I see almost everybody else has 2.5 for the most part. But we're staying a little high there because we really don't trust the Cardinals at all.
It is interesting. I think Kingsbury was very vanilla in the preseason. I'm very curious. It's strangely one of the games I'm dying to watch this week. So you wouldn't think that when at initial glance, but I'm excited to see that game. And the Rams-Carolina is another game. We talked about it since 2000. The team that loses in the Super Bowl is terrible week one. I think it's like 3-12-1 or something like that. Or obviously the math doesn't add up to since 2000, you know, whatever, 16 games. But it's something like that. And that's the early time slot as well. And Carolina's catching 3.
Yeah, we have actually. We're down to 2.5 on that game because we like Carolina here. The guys at the Superbook, we like the Panthers. Now, the customers don't agree with us because I can tell you that right now we've got about a 5.5-1 ticket count on the Los Angeles Rams. Certainly, we're going to need Carolina in that game. I would imagine that'll be the case all over town. I actually just saw another book in town go to 2 on that game. So definitely, I think that's going to be a, you know, the famous sharp versus square standoff in that game. Looks like the square guys are on the Rams. Some of the sharper players are taking Carolina and the points at home. That might be the best game on Sunday. You know, I know everyone's going to point to the Steelers-Patriots game, but to me, Steelers-Patriots is a matchup we've seen so many times. I'm more interested in seeing that Rams-Panthers game.
No, I'm with you. And seeing Cam Newton healthy, also seeing maybe Gurley healthy, and just see how Goff looks after we last saw him struggle in the Super Bowl. So that'll be candidate number one for pros versus Joes. Anything else? Maybe San Fran-Tampa is another standoff?
Really not too much action in that San Fran-Tampa game, at least at our book. We've been kind of moving with the market, and you've seen the 49ers go from +2.5 down to pick 'em. I know we feel that the 49ers defense is going to be much improved this year. A lot of young talent on that defense. Nick Bosa, the second overall pick. The question is Jimmy Garoppolo. And I don't know what the answer is. Is Jimmy Garoppolo good? I don't know yet. I don't know that we have enough evidence that he's good. I don't know that we have enough evidence that he's bad. I do know that I like Kyle Shanahan, the 49ers head coach and play caller. I trust him a lot. I just don't know what to make of Jimmy G. Tampa Bay is a hard team to project, too. I love Bruce Arians, but I don't trust Jameis Winston at all. And that's another division where they're going to be looking up at 3 teams that are all better than they are.
Agree with everything. I guess the main standoff, in addition to Carolina, the Rams, is going to be Chiefs-Jags. We've already talked about
Chiefs-Jags. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. Chiefs-Jags will be the number one standoff. We touched on Baltimore-Miami. I can tell you a game that the books are really going to need. Philadelphia at home, that number's been moved up from 8.5 now to 10. We had a guy laid -450. He bet $45,000 to win $10,000 on the Eagles. The Eagles are going to be included in so many moneyline parlays, so many teasers. And just a ton of straight bets. You know, Washington offense right now looks completely awful. Trent Williams, their left tackle, is holding out. Case Keenum going to be under center. His first game as a Redskin and going up against a really, really good Philadelphia defense. Could be a long day for Keenum. It's hard to picture Washington moving the ball against the Eagles defense with the state that their offensive line is in. I do think the Redskins' defense is underrated and better than people realize it is, but I just don't know how they're going to be able to move the ball at all against Philadelphia.
No, I agree. When the Skins drafted pretty well on the defensive side, I thought, you know, they're getting a lot of Alabama guys the last couple of years. I think they're sneaky good there. If the Giants were better, the Redskins could compete for the worst record in the NFL. But
yeah, no, I think their defense will prevent them from being at the very bottom of the league, but I know what you mean. Their offense looks awful. They're going to fire the coach, Jay Gruden, this season. They're going to blame it on him. It's not his fault. It's Dan Snyder, Bruce Allen. They've done an awful job as a front office there with the Redskins, and it's going to be a long season for them with that offense.
The other game that could compete for the best game on Sunday is Atlanta and Minnesota, and that number feels high with Minnesota laying 4.
Yeah, that's an interesting game for sure, and a lot of the sharper offshore books are down to 3.5. Yeah. I'm looking at my screen right now. I see a lot of the more prominent offshore books agreeing with you there, so don't be surprised to see that number go down between now and Sunday. And that is one of the more interesting games. Atlanta had so many guys hurt last season, and Minnesota really, they went into last year with such high expectations after being in the NFC Championship game. They bring in Kirk Cousins. Really sputtered out last year. Disastrous loss week 17 that cost them a playoff berth at home against the Bears, who had nothing to play for. But Minnesota's my pick to win the NFC North this season. They get Dalvin Cook back. They got so much talent on defense. They need better. I'll put it very simply. They need Kirk Cousins to be better than he was last year. It's that simple. I think he will be, and I like the Vikings this year.
I do, too. I am worried about Cousins, and I forget what the ATS record is against teams with winning records, but it's not good. Where do you guys stand on?
And he was like that in Washington too, Doug. I was just going to say, like, be careful with Kirk Cousins, because a lot of the success that he had in Washington, and the same, I'll say the same thing about Robert Griffin III. A lot of the success those guys had in Washington was when the Washington coaching staff included a couple guys you may have heard of: Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Matt LaFleur. So you got to be careful looking too much into those seasons and thinking that these guys are great players, because they had really top-shelf coaching, especially RG3, but Cousins benefited from it as well.
Well said. Well said. What about Cincinnati-Seattle? The late game, I don't think you're going to get a huge amount of Seattle money. Like, I don't think it's going to be pushed over 10. It may get to 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it might. And Seattle will be included in a lot of money line parlays, but there's a lot of 1 o'clock games this week, and I think the bettors' focus is going to really be much more on the Giants-Dallas game and the Indianapolis-Chargers game, and that might take away some of the interest in that Cincinnati-Seattle game. I don't think it's going to be a heavily bet game at all. Don't be surprised if the number does go up a little bit, though. Seattle will be included in so many teasers, so many moneyline parlays.
So I've waited on some of the more interesting storylines. So Giants and Dallas, this game was 7. Now, Zeke was projected in the reports. It wasn't like he was completely out, now he's playing. I was surprised it moved from 7 to 7.5, and now it's back to 7, where I think it will finish Sunday afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah, we kind of thought the whole time that Zeke would play in this game. That's why you're not seeing a big adjustment, because it was sort of already baked into the number. And plus, the reports I've read on Twitter, at least, doesn't sound like Zeke is going to get a full workload in this game. So I don't think you're not seeing a big line move because of him finally signing, and really that's why.
That's a fascinating game, because the Giants could be competent this year.
I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to trust Eli Manning. I think Dallas, you know, Dallas the last couple of years has really turned their defense over to a lot of younger players that I like a lot, you know, namely the two linebackers, Smith and Vander Esch. So it could be tough for the Giants to move the ball against Dallas's defense.
The offensive line's much better, so Eli could be better than – like, or not as bad as we think?
Mm-hmm. It's possible. I mean, it just, Eli, the last few times I've seen him, has just looked so old, and I don't really understand the point of going with Eli for another season, but I'm not in charge of the New York
Giants. No, but he's Eli Manning. Come on.
No, I know, but it just, I never understood why they took Barkley with the 2nd overall pick, even though I do think he's a great player. I think they should have invested it in a different position. And I certainly think they should have moved on from Eli Manning after last year. I just don't understand what the Giants are doing.
We'll see. I think they're going to be a little bit better than we realize. And I think Eli will be fine. I think Eli will be fine. I don't think David Jones is ready. And I think they're going to try to win a few games. Like, they're trying to win like 6 games this year, maybe 8.
That's what the Redskins have been doing for the last 20 years, trying to win 6 to 8 games. And I got to tell you, it's a stupid strategy. But what do I know?
Let's talk about tonight's game, Green Bay Chicago. This number was, I believe, 4 during the summer. It's down to 3 minus 20 with Chicago, and I've wanted to like Green Bay all summer, and I kind of have, but it just has never felt right, which means I think the Bears are the right side.
Yeah, I don't. We never were at 4. We were at 3.5. There was some money on Green Bay plus 3.5. You know, if you think back to last season, these teams played Week 1. Of course, that game was in Lambeau Field. But that number was Green Bay minus 7.5, came down to 7. Chicago really should have won that game. Obviously, we remember that. I think it was the game where the catchphrase "kicking is for losers" was born. Matt Nagy made a, in my opinion, a very poor decision to kick a field goal that ended up costing his team the game. But you could definitely make a case this number has overreacted to the Bears' success last year, which may not be sustainable. They forced 36 turnovers last year. I don't know if they can duplicate that, especially with their defensive coordinator, Vic Fangio, now the head coach of the Denver Broncos. The Bears have a lot of talent on defense, but you know, quarterback play, pretty average at best. I don't know. I mean, I think the Bears are a little overvalued coming into the season. I think the -3 is right. I think these two teams are about even. I wouldn't get involved in this game, but I can tell you, at least at our book, most of the money is either on Chicago -3, -120, or the Green Bay bettors are taking the money line. They took +150. Right now we're down to +145 on the Packers.
And is the Bears' money, is that public or pro?
I think it's just public guys both ways. Gotcha. You know, I haven't seen anything that I would really consider to be a sharper player so far. And I really don't think we're going to have much of a decision on this game unless one of our bigger house players comes in and makes a very large bet on it. Because Green Bay and Chicago are just, they're both such public teams. They both get a lot of money every week. And I expect both of them to get a ton of money tonight.
Yeah, and it's the opener. It's an island game. So
yeah, it's going to be very possibly the most heavily bet Thursday game of the year in the NFL, just because of the place on the schedule, the first game, and just because of the popularity of the two teams. And it's a very competitive game. It's a close game. It's hard to predict.
We touched on Pittsburgh, New England earlier. Sunday night, island game, two public teams. Patriots have a knack for starting slow, but for the first time in a while, no killer bees, just one bee in Roethlisberger.
Yeah, and I think for the Steelers, I like a lot of their young defensive players. They got a lot of talent in that linebacking group. And you have to think that getting rid of Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, those guys are great players, but they were distractions to the team last year. And I feel like kind of a cloud has lifted over that organization. I like the Steelers this year. I think they're going to win the AFC North. We saw money come in on them +6. We went down to 5.5. We're going to need the Steelers on Sunday night. I'm pretty sure of that. I think a lot of parlay bets will close with New England, and certainly that's always an interesting matchup and will be a very, very heavily bet game.
You know, for years I would always play the Pittsburgh team total, the New England team total against Pittsburgh. I always felt like that was like, just for some reason, Brady, and they always had a field day with that Pittsburgh defense. But those were the old days. I'm living in the past a little bit. There was a run
Brady hasn't won a Super Bowl in what, 7 months?
Yeah, yeah. Let's go to Monday night. The marquee game is Houston at New Orleans, and I've been saying all summer that I'm down on the Saints just because I think at some point Drew Brees is going to regress with age, and I just feel like this is a little bit of the passing of the torch in that division. I think Carolina or Atlanta is going to be the finish in first place there, and I love Houston, and I'm going to talk about it with Mike Clay later in the podcast. I just love Deshaun Watson. I think he's going to have an absolutely monster year. So I think the dog is the right side there. And I wonder how much you're going to, where this line's going to move though.
You know, when we opened this number back in the spring in April, we opened it New Orleans -7.5. And right away we got hit with wise guy money on Houston. We knocked our number down to 7. Right now we're at New Orleans -7, even money. I tend to agree with you. I like the addition of Laremy Tunsil for Houston, stabilizing that offensive line. We saw New Orleans last year. They really started slow. They lost week 1 to Tampa Bay. They should have lost week 2 to Cleveland, if you can believe that. And that was when Cleveland had Hugh Jackson and Tyrod Taylor as their head coach and their quarterback, and they still almost won that game. So New Orleans really started slow last year. Drew Brees looked a little shaky at the end of the season, looked like he didn't have much left in his arm. Maybe after an offseason to rest, he'll be back to normal. But I definitely agree there's some question marks about the Saints. Now, having said all that, I do think we're going to need the Texans pretty big because I know that a lot of teasers and moneyline parlays that are alive from Sunday are going to go to the Saints on Monday because I don't think too many of those bets are going to include the late game.
You know, trends are trends. They're not always sometimes they're a trap. So that's something we talk about, trend or trap. I do think there's something to New Orleans starting slow, especially when you haven't changed the quarterback and head coach, but they're 0-5 in their last 5 week 1 games. I think 0-5 ATS, excuse me. They've lost a few outright like Tampa last year. I think they're 1-9 in weeks 1 and 2 the last ATS, 1-9 the last 5 years. Wow. So there's something to be said about it. Yeah. We know about the Patriots. Patriots never start out of the gates in their best peak form. But the flip side of this is New Orleans also is like just absolutely money on Monday night at home.
Like, I was at the Dome, a New Orleans Monday night game last year.
Oh, that was the Redskins game.
Redskins got stomped by the Saints. Drew Brees broke the, what was it, the touchdown record or the yardage? The yardage record. He broke a record. And New Orleans just stomped.
Oh, like refs are shaking his hand and all.
Yeah, it was great.
Alex
was
Smith
real
was terrible.
Real feel-good story. Alex Smith was not good in that game. That was an ugly game. But this kind of reminds me, if you remember last year, the Monday night doubleheader, the first game was New York Jets at the Detroit Lions, and that line was about 7-2. And all the parlays that were left from Sunday went to the Lions in that game. Sam Darnold throws the early pick six. Lions go up 7-0, but from there, the Jets just crushed them. And that was one of our bigger winners of the year in the NFL last year.
Yeah, I do remember that one. I had a teaser on that. Let's just say I didn't have the dog in the tease. Denver, okay. Denver, Oakland. So this number's come down. It's interesting. So the Raiders' sort of perception is that they're going to stink this year because of their schedule. They're flying the most miles of any team in the NFL. I think it's 32,000 miles. And they have that month and a half stretch without a home game because a couple road games, bye week, and the London game. So they're going to go like over a month without playing at home. And
yeah, it's brutal.
But that is sort of those facts have bled into the perception of the season and also the perception of week one. But week one is different. They're at home. They're playing a team that wasn't very good last year. Mm-hmm. And the whole travel thing has not sort of run its ugly course. So I wonder.
That's had no effect on them yet. Well, I agree with you. I mean, that's had no effect on him yet, and we've definitely seen the number come down a little bit. Right now, we're at Pick'em. We were as high as Oakland -2.5. I think some money will come in on Oakland as we get closer to Monday. We got a lot more tickets on the Raiders right now. Just some, I guess, players we consider sharper have bet on Denver. That's why you've seen that number come down. But, you know, you just touched on it. If Denver doesn't win, or if Oakland doesn't win on Monday, after that they play Kansas City, at Minnesota, at the Colts, they play the Bears in England, then they go at Green Bay, at Houston. So if they don't win this game on Monday night, they might start the year 1-6 or even 0-7. So this is a big spot for the Raiders. I know that sounds ridiculous, it's week one, but this is a big spot for the Raiders. I've talked to some people around the team that have told me, when I say around the team, like media people that cover the team, they've told me they think the Raiders are going to be much improved this year, but it might not show up in their win-loss record because their schedule is so hard.
Well, that's a thing that's very important, and we talk about that with the Colts, particularly with this change from Luck to Brissett. They might win 8-9 games. It's just they're going to be laying 2 instead of 7 in some of these games or whatever it is, right? So it's all about degrees, and we talk about that. Even with tanking, you know, a lot of people sometimes think that the NBA tanking teams, there's value on the dog because they're tanking to lose the game, not to not cover. So you're catching a couple extra points because of the narrative of tanking. So the Raiders, I'm jumping around a little bit, but so the Raiders might just not stink and get blown out and roll over, fold like a cheap suit, but they still may not win some games.
Yeah, what you're saying, I think, is you just mean that there might be some value playing them when they are such a big dog in some of these road games that I just reeled off. And there's more on top of that, by the way. I stopped. I mean, I stopped short there, but they still got to play at Kansas City.
That's my move.
They got all three of their divisional road games in December. So they still got to go at Kansas City, at the Chargers, and at the Broncos in the month of December. Yeah, I mean, they're going to have a lot of games where they're a pretty decisive underdog, to say the least.
All right, more with John Murray coming up, but first, a message from Dollar Shave Club. When I talk about Dollar Shave Club, I can't stress enough the quality of their products. They've spent years developing, crafting, refining everything. They have everything I use to look, feel, and smell my best. You name it, they have it, and I use it. I've been a Dollar Shave Club member for years. It's the Executive Razor is probably my favorite. Even the scrub, the prep scrub. Yeah, full disclosure, I do use all that stuff. It's nice. Don't knock it until you try it. Men out there trying to be too manly, it does feel good. And as amazing as their shave stuff is, Dollar Shave Club is way more than just razors. Dollar Shave Club has you covered head to toe. They have everything you need to shower, shave, style your hair, brush your teeth, and yes, even wipe your butt. And Dollar Shave Club can keep you automatically stocked up on the products you use. You get what you want whenever you need it, whether that's once a month or a few times a year. I never have to waste time at a store wondering if what I'm getting is any good. As a Dollar Shave Club member, I know what I'm getting is the highest quality. And right now, you can put the quality of Dollar Shave Club's products to the test. Their Ultimate Shave Starter Set has basically everything you need for an amazing shave. The Executive Razor, Shave Butter, Prep Scrub, and Post Shave Do. The best part is, you can try it for just $5. That's it. After that, the restock box ships regular size products at regular prices. Get your Ultimate Starter Set for just $5 at dollarshaveclub.com/bets. That's dollarshaveclub.com/bets. All right, Murray, we touched on the slate of games. I want to talk about just some futures. Just in terms of what stands out this year.
Well, I think the most interesting thing, or the thing people find fascinating, is the amount of money we've had on the Bears and the Browns. And those teams are 1-2 in our Super Bowl future book. We've got big liabilities on both of them, especially the Bears. And then the Browns have had by far the most tickets of any team in the NFL to win their division. Talking about the AFC North, we've got them at +140 right now. They're by far the ticket leader there. The other teams that have been really popular, no surprise, the Oakland Raiders, we've got a huge liability on them to win the Super Bowl, on them to win the AFC West. But I thought we could talk about the MVP, because I think a lot of people find that pretty interesting. Yeah. This is the first year that we've offered NFL MVP betting. And the guys that we've just seen tons of tickets come in on are, again, from the Browns and the Bears. Baker Mayfield is our ticket count leader here. We're down to 14-1 on the second-year quarterback, Baker Mayfield. And we've got another young quarterback we've got a pretty big liability on, Mitchell Trubisky of the Bears. We're all the way down to 40-1 on Trubisky winning the NFL MVP. We've just taken a ton of money on him. We've got a massive liability on Trubisky.
What did you
open as? I was a guy who's 200-1. And, you know, I defended Trubisky last season a lot. I thought he maybe didn't get enough credit for some of their success, but to me, the idea that he could be the MVP of the league is ridiculous. I don't think that the Bears ask him to do what it would take to be the MVP. I mean, they pretty much ask him to not make mistakes. They win with their defense forcing turnovers. I like Trubisky, but he's not an MVP. He's not a league MVP type player.
No, I think you're pretty safe there. But then again,
I mean, well, Derek Carr is another guy. Now, Derek Carr is another guy we got a big six-figure liability on. We're down to 25-1 on Carr. And again, I think the Raiders are going to be much improved, like I just said, but I don't think they are going to be a team that has seriously able to contend for a playoff berth. And I think that would eliminate – this isn't baseball where Mike Trout wins the MVP with the Angels finishing 10 games below .500. I mean, you're not going to win the NFL MVP if you're not in the postseason.
Yeah, I'd say Wentz the year he got hurt and then Carr the year he got hurt. Those were like the most surprising MVP candidates that I can remember in recent years.
Well, I liked Mahomes, but I don't think anyone thought of him as an MVP.
He was 100-1. He was 100-1 before the season. So Mahomes is the wild card as well, and he actually won it. That's where I was going next. But okay. I don't think Trubisky like fits the mold of those. Maybe he was more like a Carr, I guess, the year the Carr was great.
I don't know. I wouldn't quite put Trubisky up there with Derek Carr personally. Now he does play on a much better team. And that will certainly give him more primetime games. And you got to think the Bears are going to have a better record than the Raiders. But I think there's too many quarterbacks at the top of the league that both those guys would have to leapfrog to be considered for MVP. There's so many great quarterbacks in the NFL right now. I don't see how either of those guys could really seriously contend for MVP.
Well, you guys certainly hope that's the case. No, it's been fascinating. Just tracking it all, the action. I know David Purdom's done some great content for us. And, all the huge liability you guys have always cracks us up.
It's fun, but, you know, I'll say this. I was very surprised by the fact that we've written considerably more in the NFL MVP pool than the Heisman Trophy pool. I didn't think that people cared that much about NFL MVP. That's not an award that you hear a lot of people talking about during the season, the way everybody constantly talks about the Heisman Trophy. But because of the great response we've had to this NFL MVP award, we're going to add several more NFL awards next season, probably defensive player of the year, offensive, defensive rookies of the year. Just yet another lesson that people will bet on anything that the NFL name is attached to.
Because they also just feel more confident because they feel like they know the players and know the team.
I think they know the players much better. They know the teams better, and they're just everyone's watching the NFL every week. I mean, we both know that. Mm. The popularity of the NFL is just through the roof, and that's why we're going to be so busy here this weekend all over the state and all over the country, really.
Good stuff, my man. You ready? Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready, to play the game show, America's Favorite Game?
Oh, that. I thought you meant am I ready for NFL.
No.
yeah, I'm ready for both. Go ahead.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Oh, yeah. You got to let the tunes marinate a little bit, especially in the week one pod. Can't you just see me with the long, skinny mic here?
the game show mic, like the Bob Barker mic?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
All right, my man.
I'm excited, man. We're ready. We're ready for NFL, but we don't have a baby this year. Is there something you want to tell me about?
I was just about to say, Murray, you can change that.
Oh, what do you think we should do? Should we, like... I think what we should do is... I like when people do this stuff. They bet each other, and the loser has to donate money to a charity of the winner's choice. What do you think of that?
Wasn't that what Kai's fund was? That was basically what it was.
But we were forced into Kai. I mean, I love Kai, but we were kind of forced to donate to that charity. I mean, in this scenario, we could each pick a charity, and the loser would have to donate to the other's charity.
That works.
What do you think of that?
That works. And then we have to do the same rebuys.
We might even have to match the donation at the end, but we'll talk about that. Yeah. Depending on the worth of the charity, of course.
Yes, we'll talk about it off air. We'll have things ironed out for next week. Can the charity be my gambling fund? The human fund?
The human fund. It says here $1,000 donated your name in the human fund. We could do that.
The human gambling fund. Okay, so we'll iron out the details. But you won last year. We played that was very much a tortoise in the hare. I mean, you took your time. You played defense, and you just waited for me to be erratic and firing away.
I don't think anybody won. I mean, if somebody had been booking our action, that person would have been the winner. And then, of course, Kai and his family were the real winners. Right. But I don't know that either of us.
Well, I hit my middle week five, and it was like, all right, I got to at least go.
I remember that. I remember I was home. It was like, wasn't it a Thursday night game?
Yeah, it was Colts
Patriots. I think it was the weekend I went home for my sister's wedding. Mm-hmm. I was on the East Coast, and I went to bed, and I woke up, and I was like, wow, DK hit the middle on that.
A lot of Twitter people going nuts over it. So, okay, we're going to have fun with this. I am going to be very aggressive with my playing, and we'll see where it goes.
That doesn't surprise me at all. I don't think you even need to announce that.
Speaking of middles, I'm going to set one up with the bit. I might even do some scalps with the money line now that I think about it.
Oh, my God.
So we're going to play.
Somebody better organize this stuff because I'll never be able to keep track of it.
I'm writing it down. Do you want to go first or would you like me to go first?
There's only two games I'm going to give out, and we don't really have good numbers on either of them at the Westgate, unfortunately, but I'll play them anyway. I'll go along with the show. It's all for charity.
Correct.
So,
correct. Yeah, good point.
I like the Titans +5. Now, they're on the road against the Cleveland Browns. This is a play I gave Mr. Brent Musburger yesterday on VSiN.
Ooh, that, the pressure.
Yeah, that's a pressure spot for me. So, you know, I do all these shows, but the only plays I really am invested in, I want to come through for Mr. Musburger. Everybody knows that. So I'll definitely be watching the Titans on Sunday morning, +5. I'll do that one for, 550 to win 500. How about that?
All right, and what was our bankroll? We did 10 grand, right?
Yeah, last year we had a imaginary bankroll of 10 grand. But I feel like your first bet eclipsed the bankroll itself, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I don't think that's quite. Okay, so we're going to do a dime, 1,200 to win 1,000 on the Bears -3.
Okay.
But I'm also going to do the Bears money line. Oh, I need more than 10 grand. Can we do 20?
It's your show. I'm just a guest.
That's true. Let's do, so the Bears are $1.70 on the money line, right?
Yeah, we have $1.70 here at the Westgate.
Yeah, I'm going to do 5,100 to win 3 grand.
Oh, my gosh.
But what I'm going to do is I'm going to scalp it back.
Okay.
That's the plan. And then take that profit and then cover the juice of my Bears middle.
All right. Hey, it sounds like an interesting strategy.
Okay.
But I'm only going to go with two. So I'm just going to go with two straight bets each for a nickel. I gave you the Titans +5. My other one I'll go with Carolina. Down to +2 here. There's some other numbers out there I see that I'd rather bet, but I got to play by the rules. I'll take Carolina +2. I think they win that game against the Los Angeles Rams. That's another Sunday morning game, and that'll wrap me up for the week, week one of the NFL.
So you'll do a nickel on that one as well?
Yes, yes, sir.
And by the way, somebody tweeted me at or asked me on Twitter about middling. It's very simple. -3, +4, +5, and the game lands 4. That's a middle. You hit both sides. You risk only mm-hmm. the juice of the losing side in theory if it's -110. So a lot of times it's setting up a middle, things like that. A guy was tweeting at me that he learned how to set up a middle, and he did it with the Louisville-Notre Dame game. It took +19, +20, and then played back 14 and stuck the middle. So nice job
wow.
on Monday night there. Yeah. It's easy when they all work, when they work out, right? It's all easy.
I wish they all worked out that well. I wouldn't have to do all this media stuff and work all day.
No.
But good for that listener. That's awesome.
Yeah. So you're on those two plays. I have the big yeah. action tonight. I plan on playing back both my Bears plays. I will take the over in the Jets-Bills game. It's 40.5. Is that where you guys are?
Yeah, we got 40.5 right now, Jets-Bills over the total. Two teams with young rosters and second-year quarterbacks they need to develop to have any chance of competing with the New England Patriots.
I think it's for the first time in gosh knows when the Jets have an offense that's way ahead of the defense. I think that they have no pass rush. Their secondary is really thin. I think the Bills' mm-hmm. offense is better than people realize. I think the Bills are probably the right side in that game, but I've also been wrong yeah. about Darnold a lot, so I'm just going to go with the over and hope that both teams get to 20.
Well, Buffalo, I mean, we talked about it a lot on the show last year, that they really overachieved last season and nearly, I almost lost my win total bet under on Buffalo, if you remember that. Sean McDermott, tremendous coach, Buffalo, and I like a lot of the stuff their front office has done. I like a lot of their recent draft picks, so they're a team to watch, but, you know, New England's going to certainly win that division again.
I'm doing a nickel on the Ravens -6.5. I'll take the bait.
How much was the Buffalo bet? I'm sorry.
Sorry, nickel as well.
Nickel. And then the Ravens -6.5. Okay.
What's your teaser juice? What's your teaser juice in the NFL?
40, 50, 60.
What does that mean?
$40 for 6 points.
$40 for two teams.
We talked about this on the show last year.
Wow, that's a lot. That's not what it is. A lot of offshore joints.
This ain't an offshore joint. We talked about this on the show last year. That's why you didn't do any teasers.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That's a high. That's high.
I wouldn't recommend it.
So for those listening who have the option to do $1.10, highly recommend it.
At $1.10, a 6-pointer where you go through 3 and 7, yes, I would agree with you.
I remember back when you were with the Hilton, which is formerly the Westgate, you guys had to change your teaser odds. I believe that's a story we did tell you last year when you told me about the $1.40.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I think there was an advantage playing through those key numbers in the NFL at those prices, especially the games with the lower totals. You'd want to focus there because certainly the points would be, in theory, more valuable in a game with a total of, say, 38.5 than in a game with a total of 50 or 51.
Right. One final play, then. I'll do a nickel on the Falcons +4.
I like that one. Okay. Yeah. And then, all right, should I expect to see you playing back on the Packers tonight
yeah,
when I'm at home?
It should be an eventful game tonight, and then we'll see if we have to press for the Sunday.
I'm happy you're just dipping your toe in the water.
Yeah, yeah. Just
in week one.
Yeah, just a mild, you know, eight grand in play. I think there's going to be a heavy money line parlay as well. Eagles. Teams like that. Maybe an Eagles Seahawks for everything, for the bankroll. Because what I really want to do is...
It's week one.
What I really want to do is get... Well, we have rebuys. I want to get a big lead on you and force you to chase. That's my goal. Might take a while to get you to cave.
It's a long season. Now, we're doing this through the regular season or through the Super Bowl?
It's a good question. I think it should be through the regular season. What do you think?
I think the regular season's better.
Yeah.
We can just do it through...
And
we'll stop it at week
17. We'll work out the rules, but I think there was a protection in there, built-in clause, where you can't just, you know, start tripling up or chasing and doing all that nonsense.
Well, the idea was there had to be a maximum bet so that we couldn't just say, oh, okay, I got $1 million on the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Okay, I won. So
right. So that's why the rebuys cost. And I think the concept was, and the reason I don't like, as much as I respect the super concept, it's just not indicative. When people have their own bankroll, you should be able to wager different amounts on different games and also have live betting, second half betting, and also just the concept of not doing the same amount of picks every single week. And
well, that's a truer test.
Correct.
A bankroll challenge is a truer test. It's just that the super contest, you're trying to keep the format relatively simple.
No, for it's great. It's a contest. But I wanted to do this. The spirit of the bankroll bonanza was to do something that was more simulated.
Okay. I'm comfortable with it.
Okay. So we are good. I'll set up the spreadsheet like I did last year, but I got a late start, and we'll go from there, my man.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
I am very happy right now. This is my last interview of the week. I'm going to go take a nap underneath my desk, Costanza style, like in the little cubby hole here, and get ready for the start of the NFL season.
I call BS on that. I think you will get rallied and rounded up for one more media interview.
Yeah, actually, I just got a text from a guy a few minutes ago asking if he could talk to me about college football. But this is my this is the last one I had on the books.
Okay.
I got one on Saturday. But we'll see. I mean, everybody wants to talk about sports betting right now. I don't have to tell you that. You know that as well as anybody. Everybody wants to talk about sports betting, and everyone is excited for the start of the NFL season.
As we are as well. So good catching up, my man, and it's going to be a fun season.
Yeah, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Baby needs a new pair of shoes. Come on.
Big pressure for you. Mike Clay in here. And baby needs a new pair of shoes, my friend.
Yeah, I guess he does. I have no idea what that drop is.
it's a common phrase you hear a lot of, maybe the craps tables when the dice are coming out.
Yeah,
but good to have you in studio here, man. We did it last year. You were excellent. You've been on Daily Wager a lot. You're doing stuff for ESPN.com's chalk section. So I figured we'd continue doing props here on the podcast.
Yeah, let's do it.
You ready to fire away? So we had you a couple weeks ago. We did some season props. Well, let's roll up the sleeves, get into the games. We have a season opener clearly tonight with the Bears hosting the Packers, and which prop stands out to you as the ones you like?
Yeah, there's one that stands out tonight, and it's Mitch Trubisky under 248.5 passing yards. I like this one a lot. I mean, last season, seven quarterbacks reached 250 passing yards against the Packers. Mitch Trubisky, despite playing them twice, was not one of them. He had 171 yards in week one. He had 235 in their home win in week 15. And in fact, he only cleared 248 yards in 5 of 15 games last season. Three of them came in four losses. So the Bears, they still have an elite defense. They're at home. They're favored. You know, we think they're going to be able to run the football. And also, the Packers defense, a lot better. Two good safeties, Amos and Savage, they bring in this offseason. They add to their edge rush with three new guys, including Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith. And that cornerback room could actually be pretty good, too. And, you look at, like, Jair Alexander in his second season. So I think that defense could be kind of a surprise unit this season. I think it all kind of adds up to Trubisky coming in closer to maybe 220 yards tonight.
I was surprised the difference between the two quarterbacks, what their props were. 248.5 and 266.5. Only an 18-yard gap between Rodgers and Trubisky. So that makes sense to me that you would go under Trubisky, because I was surprised by the narrow window.
Yeah, definitely. And I have the gap kind of close too. I have Rodgers at 253. I mean, I think he's going to have to throw more, but he's also facing the Bears, so we wouldn't expect efficiency to be too good against that defense.
So yeah, and obviously he has struggled at Soldier Field in recent years.
Yeah, no doubt.
And he did well at home to the Bears, but
Eric, a quick trivia for you. When is the last time Rodgers scored a touchdown in Soldier Field?
Interesting. The playoff game? I don't know.
It was week one of 2015. Okay. That's the last time he scored a touchdown in
Soldier
Field.
He hasn't even thrown a touchdown pass?
No. I think he missed one game in there too, but they've shut him down.
How much adjustment do you make the fact that Vangio's gone and then also just Matt LaFleur coming in a different offense?
Yeah, I think with Aaron Rodgers under center, it's going to be hard for that offense to be worse in Green Bay.
Right.
I mean, they have the tools in place. The O-line is still pretty good.
McCarthy's situation.
It did not work out too well. Like I said, I think the defense will be better. They want to run the ball a little bit more, but I think the offense can score more touchdowns, kind of bounce back, see a better season out of Aaron Rodgers. On the other side with Chicago, for me, most of my, we'll say, assessment or analysis of a unit is going to be based on the talent they have in play. And you'll move the needle for coaching for sure, but there's a reason why Vic Fangio suddenly won assistant coach of the year and got a head coaching job out of nowhere last year. And it's because that defense was the best one he ever had by far on paper. And it still is. It's still loaded. They lose Adrian Amos and Bryce Callahan. They bring in HaHa Clinton Dix and Buster Screen. They, you know, downgraded a little bit, but you still have all of these. I'm not even going to list them off because there's so many. They have studs all over the field led by Khalil Mack. This is still the best defense in the league on paper.
All right, so let's go to the weekend. Primetime Sunday night, you got nothing.
Yeah, I have nothing for Sunday night. Too close to call. Sometimes the projection's just a line, and you don't want to get, you know, you don't want to give people bad advice,
right, or force it.
Just force it, right? So I have nothing for Sunday.
But we have a doubleheader for Monday Night Football.
I have a lot for Monday.
Feed the people.
All right, let's go. Houston and New Orleans. This could be a shootout. This is going to be a fun game.
I really like the over in this game.
Yeah, I cannot wait to see how the Texans look with all the changes they just made. So I love Deshaun Watson. I think he's still underrated. I think he had an outstanding breakout year last season, but we didn't talk about it because Pat Mahomes overshadowed everybody else. But he was still terrific. I like the over in this one. The line, 270.5 passing yards. I'm going to go over on that. He hit that mark 6 times last season. He averaged 8.2 yards per attempt, which is just terrific. Look at his yardage totals passing in losses during the regular season last year. So 176 in week one. That was a disaster, obviously. They started very slow before that win streak, if you recall. But after that, 310. 385, 267, which is just under this mark, and 339. They are a home under, or they're a road underdog playing at the Superdome in this game. We do expect him to have to throw more than usual. Also, the Saints defense, pretty good on paper last season. They were still third in terms of passing yards allowed, also top 11 in pass attempts against completions, average depth of throw, yards per attempt, completion percentage. They're a very good team. Teams have to throw the ball against them. Watson's going to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I've talked about it a lot on this podcast and in the chalk space. Basically, what Watson had, what was he, had 18 touchdowns in like 9 games or 8 games, or 19 touchdowns in 8 games 2 years ago before he got hurt. And it just takes time to, you know, rehab these injuries. And we're seeing it with Carson Wentz. Finally, he doesn't have the knee brace. I think Watson's going to have a big year. They just added Tunsil, obviously, and it's just going to be a better offensive line. And he has a bunch of weapons. So who knows about the rushing attack with Houston now? So I just think it's going to be a very much an aerial attack with Watson. He'll have a big, big, big year, and I think he'll have a big, big game against the Saints here.
Yeah, it was quiet until the Tunsil move and the trades this past weekend during cut day and cut weekend, but they really totally revamped that offense around him. It is much better. You have healthier receivers. They add Kenny Stills to QT and Fuller. You have Hopkins. Tight end's going to look different with Jordan Akins in his second year and a couple other guys who went to IR. The offensive line, not only Tunsil, but they drafted 2 guys in the early rounds, too. Right? They have Henderson at right tackle now. I mean, this is going to be a... And now, of course, you mentioned the backfield's revamped. It's like a whole new offense around him. And he was already very good, very productive last season.
What about... you have another one with Alvin Kamara.
Yeah, touchdown's always tricky, of course, and this one's at minus 135, so it's hard to get excited about it, but I'm going to say yes to an Alvin Kamara touchdown. I have him scoring 1 combined, rushing and receiving, so I'm going to lean towards yes here. 18 touchdowns last season. Again, another guy who, you know, a lot of hype in fantasy circles. Obviously, we all view him as a great back, but, you know, you had a guy like Todd Gurley score, what do you have, 21 in 14 games, so he kind of steals the spotlight, but Kamara, 13 carries inside the 5 last year. It was 4th most, 14.5 total OTD. That's his expected touchdown based on his usage, 2nd only to Gurley. That tells you he's getting a lot of work near the goal line, a lot of volume. You like that. Now, Houston only allowed 5 carries inside the 5 last season. That was fewest in the league, only 8 rushing touchdowns. That was 8th fewest in the league. But they did allow 5 end zone targets and 6 receiving touchdowns that both were highest. And, of course, that's to running backs. Alvin Kamara, we know, 82 catches each of his first 2 seasons in the league. He is featured in that area, and we know he gets that work near the goal line, too. So it would not surprise me if he does it in the as a pass catcher as opposed to a rush from the goal line.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that lends itself to the shootout kind of narrative, so I'm good there. And we have a doubleheader, obviously, opening weekend, Oakland-Denver. Steve Levy calling the game, fired up him to do that. And I'm on Denver in terms of few, like I have +2.5, +2, so I'll play back here, but that's a sidebar. You got 2 props for us.
I do. Both running backs, both of the lead backs, we'll say, in this game. We'll start with Philip Lindsay for Denver, 64.5 rushing yards. I am going under in his final 3 games last season under this mark, 5.4 yards per carry for the season last year. Obviously, he was hyped up for a lot of those big plays, but 3.82 yards came before contact. That was 2nd highest among running backs. You can't count on that. And 1.58 after contact. That was 14th worst among running backs. We saw him start to regress to the mean late in the season. He averaged 2.6 yards per carry in those final 3 games before he got hurt. And the team, new coaching staff, you mentioned Vic Fangio's there. They have not hidden this. Royce Freeman in his second year is going to play a much larger role.
So there's legit buzz there. It's not just
Yeah, they want to use both of these guys. They want a two-man backfield, and it's going to be a three, honestly, with Devontae Booker handling some passing situations. So more Freeman means less for Lindsey. I think he's going to fall short of this line. By the way, teams ran a lot in Oakland last year, but this should be a competitive game. I think the line is even right now, but we expect this to be a close game. That means Denver's not necessarily going to be blowing out a team like Oakland. Like last year, teams just ran on them so much because they were beating them. That won't necessarily be the case here.
Okay, and the other running back, the rookie.
Yeah, Josh Jacobs. I'm going to go the other way here. I'm going to go over on 52.5 rushing yards. I have him with 74 rushing yards and 16 carries. So this one is not even close. I like this one a lot. Jacobs is going to be the primary rusher here. You have Jalen Richard handling targets. And if you think, well, maybe they have a veteran to handle some carries too and bring him along slowly. Who? DeAndre Washington, that's the only other back there. Derek Carr is not going to take
and carries. Alabama's a triple A NFL team anyway, so he's ready for week one.
Yeah, and Doug Martin was there. He was on IR and released from IR, so he's gone. I mean, it is the Josh Jacobs show. We know he can make up yardage by breaking tackles. He was best in this class at college last season. And we talked about this on Daily Wager, Doug. 11 running backs picked in round one since 2012. The average rushing yardage total for those backs that season, 933.8 yards. That includes duds like David Wilson. Wilson, like he had 100. That's counted, and the number is still almost 934 yards. These guys get the rock. And by the way, last year, Broncos defense, fourth in carries and sixth in rushing yards against, allowed almost 5 yards per carry. And you don't want to overrate that stuff, but their defensive front is almost the same, right? I know Vic Fangio's there. Maybe that is a factor, but it is the same defensive front personnel-wise pretty much. So I think he'll have a big NFL debut.
All right. I'm looking forward to it because I have him in my big fantasy league as well.
Love it.
All right, dude. Good to catch up. Good to have you launching the podcast for the regular season now on a good note. And let's pick some winners.
Yeah, it's always fun. Let's do it.
Thank you.
Pay that man his money.
And, of course, we need to thank Bob Lee. Always a legend living on here at ESPN and here on the Behind the Bets podcast. So he is retired, enjoying life. I've seen him a couple times clearing out his office and all that fun stuff. And I thanked him, and he's brought a smile to his face knowing that he's still got his drops voiced here. But thanks to John Murray, thanks to Mike Clay, and thanks to all of you for listening. Should be a great season here on the podcast. We got a lot of things going on. Remember, Daily Wager, Monday through Friday, 6 to 7 Eastern. And then we have a Sunday show now, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern. Now, it's mostly on ESPN2, but there are some moving parts. So Mondays will be on ESPN News. I'm actually going to be off on Mondays. And then Tuesday through Friday will be on ESPN2. And then that Sunday show will be on ESPN2 eventually, but September it'll be on ESPN News. So it's a little bit of bouncing around a little bit. We hope you're going to be following us all there, but we will have a show this Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern. And I'm fired up. I hope all you guys are. And let's have some winners.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.